Tisdall, Executive Director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, is here to talk about the NCLR event on April 2nd at the Dyna in Palm Springs and give us her spin on our LGBT issues. Hi, Kate.
Hello, Charlotte. Happy to be here.
Tell us about the National Center for Lesbian Rights.
Well, we were founded in 1977 as really a law firm for the LGBT community on issues that weren't being addressed at the time. These were issues that primarily affected lesbians. We were founded by a lesbian feminist, then became a judge, now a retired judge, Donna Hitchin. And issues then that lesbians primarily were facing dealt with custody and employment, losing custody of our kids, being fired from our jobs. And the organizations that existed at that time that did LGBT legal work were focused on the military, believe it or not, way back then, and getting rid of sodomy laws. Again, believe it or not, way back then. And Donna really felt like there needed to be an organization that focused on issues that primarily affected lesbians. And yet, lo and behold, right as soon as she founded NCLR, we were representing gay men who were facing those same issues. So we've continued to be a law firm addressing issues that affect the entire community that maybe other people aren't addressing, and also doing a fair amount of policy work to get things changed short of litigation if we can. So we're really the advocates for the community.
How did you get involved?
I was raised in Utah, grew up actually Mormon in Utah, and after being at a firm when I got out of law school, I was the first staff attorney for the ACLU of Utah, the American Civil Liberties Union, which is obviously a fabulous civil liberties and civil rights organization all over the country. And that got me really involved in civil rights, which was always my first love. And then, just frankly enough, I met my now wife, Sandy, at an ACLU conference. She was here in San Francisco, and she was on the board of NCLR. First I'd ever heard of the organization, and this is like 1993. A position came open at NCLR for legal director. I applied, got the job, moved out here to San Francisco, and have never looked back. It's just been a thrill.
What do you hope to accomplish with your work?
Well, our ultimate goal is the full liberation of queer people in this country. And what we mean by that is not just freedom from discrimination, freedom from government intrusion or government-sponsored stigma of who we are, but really the freedom to live fully and freely, to not face any negative action, to have full dignity based on who we are as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender people. And we're a ways away from that goal. We've made some huge strides towards it, but there are many people in this country that wake up still fearful of what might happen to them based on their gender identity or their sexual orientation, and we're not going to rest until everyone wakes up, no matter where they live in this country, feeling like they can be who they are and be fully accepted and embraced with their queer identity as either a transgender person or a lesbian, gay, bisexual person, not an impediment to full opportunity.
Tell us about the Palm Springs NCLR event at the Dyna.
The Dyna has their huge week-long celebration in conjunction with the golf tournament that's down there in Palm Springs. And for many, many years, I'd never been to the Dyna, and people kept threatening to take away my lesbian card. And finally, I thought, oh, geez, I've got to go. And, you know, it's 10,000 lesbians and others, trans women, of course, gay men show up as well. But it's definitely a lot of lesbians showing up in Palm Springs for, you know, a whole bunch of partying, some social activism, a time to really be free and open, you know, catch a little golf if they want to. And we decided that we wanted to start doing an NCLR event down there, a fundraising event, because as a nonprofit, almost all of our support comes from individual donors. And so we started this event maybe 6 years ago, I guess, 5 or 6 years ago. And now it's turned into just a hugely successful, fabulous, fun event where we celebrate a bit, we have a good time, but we also understand and make a commitment that we're not done yet. At the event, every year, we honor someone who has kind of made a mark, maybe had years of contributions. It could be an unsung hero, or it could be somebody who's in the news in a whole range of different areas. Last year, we honored Lily Tomlin, which was amazing and awesome. My first chance to meet her, which was fabulous. In the past, we've honored Meredith Baxter. We've honored Chris Cluey, the Vikings, former Vikings punter, who came out as a strong advocate for the freedom to marry. And this year, I'm super excited that we're going to be honoring former San Francisco mayor and now California Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, who's been a huge champion for our movement and is just a rock star for our community, and my longtime friend Jackie Paskupski, who is the first openly gay mayor in any town in Utah, and it just happens to be Salt Lake City, and she was elected last fall, and I was at her inauguration in January. So we're honoring our political heroes who really stood up for us, stand up for us every day, and really make a mark. And Gavin and Jackie, as our honorees, are going to make the event especially fun, as far as I'm concerned.
What is your personal commitment to LGBT civil rights?
I feel like it has been such an enormous privilege to really interweave the personal and the political. I mean, I am a lesbian. I identify as a queer woman in a long-term relationship, married to my wife, raising two kids. So I feel like every day I have to walk the talk of what it means to do this work at the highest level, at the most effective level. I am a part of the very community that I am serving, and so I feel particularly accountable. I feel accountable to my soul, at the same time I feel accountable to my community to really be always a very, very fierce advocate. And even though I live in a relative privilege as a white woman with a decent job, with a good income and a good education, I know a lot of people in our community don't have that, and I feel like our charge doing these jobs is to be there for the most vulnerable in our community. So it feels every day very, very personal to get it right.
What would you like to see happen for LGBT equality in the next few years?
I think that what I would like to see happen for LGBT equality in the next few years, in many ways, is already happening. I mean, we've won the freedom to marry nationwide, and we got the government out of the business of discriminating in marriage, which was enormously important for people to actually examine their private prejudices before they could just say, well, the government doesn't let them marry, something must be wrong with them. So that was an enormously important win. But I think what now people understand is it's not the end. And in many ways, we are still stigmatized. People are still subject to discrimination. Some of the most vulnerable in our community, particularly if you're a poor, transgender, African-American woman living in rural Mississippi, you do not feel safe. If you are a young kid with a very hostile family, hostile to your new recognition of yourself as gay, and you've just come out to them, you are probably attacked in your schools, hallways of your schools, and don't feel safe at home. That cannot stand. We have got to change the nation. We've got to change this culture. And that's the next front. And I feel like what I'm gratified by is I think our community is understanding that we can't declare mission accomplished until everyone everywhere in our community lives fully able to be who they are, free from stigma and discrimination.
As you just said, LGBTQ teens are four times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers, and we continue to have numerous teens taking their own lives after facing bullying incidents. What advice would you have for these kids?
Well, I think it is true that it gets better, and I want them to know that. But it's very, very hard when you feel like you're terrorized every day to think ahead, to think, oh, well, this is fine. I only have to put up with this for 3 more years or 5 more years, and especially if you don't have any refuge. And so what I advise teens is to reach out. Find one person, an adult or a peer, one person who supports you and embraces you. Reach out on social media and see that there is a huge community out there waiting for you. It's important to say it gets better, and I feel like that effort was enormously important to be able to send the message to young people. If you just hang on now, I promise your life is going to be amazing. I think that's hugely important. But in the moment of crisis, reaching out to, whether it's the Trevor Project, whether it's our organization, we do a lot of youth work, and we can certainly refer youth to assets and to resources they can use in their own community. Just find a touchstone, just somebody who you can hang on to. You have a little bit of a lifeline to help pull you out of the moments where you feel the most despondent. And I feel like us having a really fierce conversation about making sure that this culture most protects the most vulnerable is the most important thing we can do as leaders. So wherever these young people are, they know they know that there is a community there for them, and we're easy to spot and easy to find. So we literally have to be everywhere, and wherever these young people are, particularly in some of the most rural and hard-to-get-to places, those are the kids I'm most concerned about, and those are the kids we have to make sure understand that we are here for you, and just reach out and find, and we need to find them too. So it's really about hanging on and knowing that there's a bright future for you if you can just get through this difficult moment.
How can people get info about NCLR and the DINAH event?
People can go to our website, nclrights.org, nclrights.org, and there should be information under events. There's a bunch of information about the DINAH. We'd love to have people at the event. They can buy tickets there. It's a garden party, so it's like 5 to 7 on Saturday, April 2nd in Palm Springs. It'll be beautiful weather. It always is that time of year in Palm Springs. And it's such a fun party and such an enjoyable experience. And the proceeds, 100%, because we already have a lot of sponsorships, 100% of what we raise at that event goes directly to our program work on behalf of queer youth, transgender individuals, LGBT families, people try in sports who need to save their scholarships or save their jobs, immigration. That's the range of the work that we do, and every single penny that we will raise at the Palm Springs event will go to that program work.
What other projects are you working on?
Some of the biggest stuff we're facing right now is implementation of the marriage ruling. As we all know, any student of civil rights history knows, anytime there's a win for a community that's previously been marginal, there's a backlash, and we're in the middle of our backlash right now. So beating back these religious exemption laws that seek to carve out LGBT people from protection of the law, fighting back against those, ensuring implementation of the marriage ruling. I mean, after Obergefell, we lost recognition of an adoption that our client got in Georgia, in Alabama, where she and her ex-partner had moved to. They had a legal adoption from Georgia, and the Alabama Supreme Court, headed, of course, by that total insult to law, Roy Moore, denied recognition of the adoption. That had never happened in the history of this country. We just won at the Supreme Court. Without argument, without having to even brief it, they issued what they call a summary reversal. This hardly ever happens. It was a unanimous rebuke to what Roy Moore had done. But this idea that an adoption denied recognition shows that we are still very vulnerable in a post-Obergefell world. And so making sure that our families are still protected and still being there is some of the most important work we're doing right now.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
You know, as an executive director, I mean, part of my responsibility is making sure that the organization has the financial resources it needs to do its work. And the one thing I want people to understand is that I don't care if you can give $5 or you can give $5,000. 80% of our funding to do our work comes from individual donors who give us $5 or give us all the way up to $50,000. We aggregate all of those gifts, and that is how we can be out in any state, how we can take the phone calls, 5,000 calls and contacts that we get a year from people who need us to be there for them, to represent them. We could not do this work without that support. And I just want everyone to understand, don't think you don't make a difference. Even if you can only give a small amount, you have lots of other people that we use to aggregate that amount to make us be able to be strong and be able to respond and be able to be on the defensive if we have to, or on the offensive when we can, to be the fiercest advocates we possibly can be for our community. So our relationship and our promise and our contract with our donors is you give what you can and we will make you proud and we will give you a huge return on your investment. That relationship between us and people who support us is the only way we can do the work that we do.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
Many, many years ago, actually in my previous relationship, my sister-in-law at the time gave me a quote that's still framed and hung up on my bulletin board by Ralph Waldo Emerson. And it says, "Do not follow where the path may lead. go instead where there is no path and leave a trail. And when she gave that to me, I remember thinking it was a way of her understanding kind of the way I was wired. So that was really important to me. And since then, it's been a mark of understanding how sometimes in these jobs or when you're doing any sort of social justice work, you're going to have to blaze a new trail. And it's scary. And it may not feel comfortable. But once that trail is blazed, then everybody else can follow it. And that's how you win greater liberation. So it continues to inspire me to think that way.